Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode one of Crossing the River, a Dota and esports podcast. Fancy little graphic down there with our name. Shout out to Neman, our graphic designer who made that wonderful background for us. Yeah, and our names. I am Brightside with my favorite co-caster and all-around favorite being Apon Zeus. Hello, Apon. How are you today?
It's a pleasure being here with you, Brightside. I always love talking with you, and we're going to talk about some esports stuff, some Dota stuff. It's going to be a great time.
Absolutely. So this podcast is kind of designed to be the C-Dub esports intro to content, I guess. This is kind of the first big piece that we're going to be doing. It's going to be a monthly podcast. Not really sponsored by C-Dub, but we're associated with C-Dub, so however you want to phrase it. C-Dub, for those of you that are listening, tuning in, hopefully, first off, like and subscribe. Thank you. This will be on YouTube, Spotify, everywhere you can find your podcasts. It's a recent esports org coming into Dota, Age of Empires, soon to be Wild Rift, by the way, apparently.
Ooh!
I don't know much about the Wild Rift scene, but that is apparently in the works. I'm mostly focusing on the Dota side of things. So recent news for the C-Dub Dota team: they took first place in the TD2L Weekend Pro Series. So they beat a bunch of teams you might have heard of. They beat the AMB team though in the finals. It was AMB Napkin. And I couldn't tell you who the other players are off the top of my head, but they got first place, $200, not too shabby.
So you could say the C-Dub saw the dub.
They did, yeah. This was the first tournament they've played with the new roster. For those of you that don't know, new roster is Double King Carry, Mark, position 2, Lewis, position 3, Aframoosh, position 4, and Sanctified, position 5. That'll be the roster going into DBC qualifiers as well in a couple months. So look forward to that. So moving on to our first big topic, we're going to start with not Dota stuff, but just gaming in general. Overwatch 2 has released. Technically, it's released. Some people haven't been able to play, but thoughts on so new Overwatch 2, brand new game. Obviously, you mentioned it already. It's kind of the same game. What do you think about this?
Yeah, so like, first of all, some server issues. Like pretty much any new game that has like servers, there are going to be server issues when it first comes out. It's just like the nature of the beast when you have online play. Right now, like, I've been able to play it. Got a few rounds in, and so far I've played the new hero, Kiriko, the new healer, and I feel like it's just very, very similar to Overwatch, where I can't really tell too many differences apart from like the number of how many there are. Like, instead of 6, we're going to 5, which, okay, is a change, but like, how, like, you still just see many people on like fighting each other. Like, it's still just one big team fight thing. So overall, not really quite sure how to feel about it on my end.
Yeah, I won't lie. I do tend to agree with you on that. We don't have very many. I guess that's the wrong way of saying it. To me, it feels like this game, same game, like you said. I haven't been able to play because every time I load in, I get into a queue. But that's neither here nor there. When I played the beta, I played a decent amount of the beta. It felt like the exact same game. But for me, it felt faster paced, which I think is that's kind of the one nice thing about this change from 6v6 to 5v5 is there's just, it seems a little bit more chaotic. And for me, the other big thing going into this new release is that they're not roll locking you anymore. I believe in competitive. So yeah. There's one other big thing. There is a battle pass that we'll talk about here in a second, but you're not defined by queuing tank roll or tank DPS healer. I believe you can just play anything.
Yeah, in competitive, there's still like role queue in unranked. If you are like, yo, I just want to play support or healer, such as myself, I pretty much only play support or healers. And so you can still just queue as that. I think it's kind of true that like most likely the games will be a little bit faster pace, which I'm not sure how good that is for this game. For me, the issue with Overwatch nearly always has been that it is very, very difficult to follow what is going on as a spectator. Like for me, I always think about it like, how do I, for an esports, think about this game as it wants to just like it wants to appeal to an audience, it wants to be entertaining, it wants to have a storyline. And I just feel like you just see like six, now five, going against each other. And yeah, there are some big ultimates committed, but there's like a lot of very fast paced stuff, which is hard to follow.
Yeah, opinion. Absolutely. It's not the most spectator friendly of esports, right? There's a lot going on. There's a lot of flanking, and it can be kind of hard to catch everything that's going into the game. So the other big thing about Overwatch 2 is that some of the new heroes, I believe Junker Queen and Kiriko, are locked behind a pay-to-buy battle pass. Is that correct?
Not exactly. So they are free to play, as in you can grind for them in the battle pass, but it takes a lot of levels. So far, I've played like 5 games. I've not gotten a single level in the battle pass yet, like one additional level. So that's kind of okay. I would need like 50 or so to have Kiriko available in competitive. So it feels kind of odd. And it feels like, given that the game feels so, so similar to Overwatch and to the very few additions that have happened to it in terms of like, there are some new heroes, which is cool. I like new heroes. I think that's very cool. But it's is that worth it? What I personally am looking forward to, them having the PvE content with it, which right now is not out yet. So I kind of want to see what's going on that front before I really make too big of a claim onto this game.
Yeah, for me, and I'll just say this briefly, it does, you know, the Overwatch 2 is free to play. So even if you didn't own Overwatch 1, you can play Overwatch 2. And you have to remember, Overwatch, the initial Overwatch was, what, $40, I believe, on release? Mm-hmm. So in my opinion, they can make as many, you know, pay for this feature as much as you want, considering that the vast majority of the game is free. That's, yeah. You know, and that's kind of where I'm at. It's kind of like Dota, right? Like, the game's free. You can go in and play a comp Dota game at any point. All the Battle Pass stuff is just extra for the most part. So that's the Overwatch 2 news. Moving on to Dota. We are, what, 2 days away from the Last Chance qualifiers, Apon. So first things first. Last Chance qualifiers, these were the two teams that did not win their regional qualifiers. Mm-hmm. So the way the DPC was formatted this year, 12 teams automatically qualified to TI through DPC points, through majors and performing well in the DPC. And then the teams that didn't make her were in the regional qualifiers. And I believe everybody was invited to that from their based off of the DPC results, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And so,
if you got 8th place in Division 2, you are still in it.
So all of the DPC teams got to participate, as well as, you know, Happy Seals, ex now C Dub, got to perform. We lost, but anyway.
It was an old roster.
It was the old roster, exactly. Come Copium over here. And so now all of those teams were in the regional qualifier, and the winner of those automatically went to TI. Mm-hmm. The two teams, the second and third place teams from each qualifier, got invited to the Last Chance qualifier, which will be starting on October 8th, 2 days from now. All of those teams are on site in Singapore.
Yes, they are on site in Singapore, and whoever, like, only the top two teams out of those 12 will get into TI, which, in my opinion, makes this one of the most fun event to watch that is, like, new for TI. Like, we've had different other events before. We had, like, wildcard events, such as, like, a TI 6 and TI 5, where there were, like, four teams that were facing up against each other that were just, like, two teams advancing. But that was, like, two teams advancing out of four teams. That's a little bit of a blood fest, but you have 12 teams competing for two spots. Like, this is pretty much Hunger Games right there. And what I'm personally looking forward to is, like, how much production and quality will go into that last chance qualifier, because that can be some of the most hyped games. Because, like, the highest level of gameplay is always, like, with Dota 2, of course, the most fascinating to watch, but also slightly below that, even very, still very, very, very high Dota play, like, there are some small mistakes that are happening and suddenly there's chaos on the map. And, you know, I just love seeing some chaos for myself.
Yeah, and you mentioned the production. So all of the last chance qualifiers and the group stage for the TI itself are going to be remotely produced, which is strange. I think this is the first time that the group stage will not be casted on site.
Yeah.
And it definitely feels like PGL is doing PGL things, I guess, you could put it that way. First off, PGL running TI, there's a lot of question marks surrounding that, where when you just compare the quality of majors produced, PGL produced the Arlington Major, which did not get great reception, I believe, just from the sound quality to pretty much the stream had issues as well. It was just overall not very good. And I believe the other majors and then ESL Malaysia were just significantly better. So the decision for PGL to be hosting it was already kind of weird, and then you tack that on top of, now they're making this, you know, are they even, some may say they're trying to save money by, you know, they're, I think they're in Norway, they're remotely producing the English in English production in Norway, but I believe the casters are at home.
Yes, so the way that I understood, so, like, most of this is based off of tweets as well as, like, talking to some talent, that some talents have given, like, their own thoughts onto it, is the way that I understood it is that the last chance qualifier will be cast from casters in their own home, and the panel will be in Norway. Now, I feel like it's like important to note here that when it was, how it was done in previous TIs was that, like, we saw, like, we had, like, four streams going, and every, like, for all four streams had, like, a different casting pair, and, like, all casting just did, like, one or two series, and then there would be a switch of pairs, and that just kept going, and there was, like, one overall hub that swapped between certain streams, so you can, like, get the information up on all games. In theory, this could be done similarly, even if the casters are at home. Now, I think it's important to note that this is not just, like, I feel like a lot of people are upset, but it's not just people being upset because they think it might be going wrong. It is that we already saw the regional qualifiers having been hosted by PGL with most talent, I believe all talent, casting from their own home, and multiple technical difficulties coming up, such as suddenly one caster wasn't heard, the stream completely stopped, it was lagging very, very badly on stream in terms of, like, what you see in the Dota. So, like, there are definitely concerns there, and I kind of wonder how they are going to be addressing these concerns from the regional qualifiers now to the last chance qualifiers.
Yeah, and to me, I share those exact same concerns, And I just always, I get worried about all of these steps that Valve is kind of, because it was always that Valve, TI was Valve's thing. It was nobody could associate. Valve produced it. Valve, you know, they put up all the money, they hired talent, and they did everything. And now this year, I don't recall what they did last year, but now they're saying, okay, PGL, you take the lead. We'll associate with you. But PGL is taking control of everything in an event that Valve, it always seemed like this was Valve's, you know, baby to an extent. And it feels like they're almost throwing it to the wolves. And for, you know, as a Dota fan, it's very concerning, right? To be kind of witnessing this, you know, and you tack that on top of the betting sponsor and everything else that is going on with this. There's just a lot of negative vibes that are going out.
I understand that. I want to like share a little bit of a different light on it, because I always feel like it's very easy to be pessimistic. It's very, very easy to be pessimistic. I always want to be positive. I try to be an optimist. Sometimes struggling at that, but like looking at what has happened, there are some things for me that are still looking like there might be things to improve, maybe not specifically for this TI, but what I'm thinking about is, so maybe Valve did try, as you said, like they're going to give everything to PGL. How is that going to go? I feel like Valve is very much a company that is like, we're going to try something out and then we see the data on it and then we make changes. And in order to try something out, you will have to see it all the way through. Meanwhile, we have seen, like, for example, with the stickers for the talents and their voice lines, there was very big uproar about the gambling aspect of it, that you can't just buy the voice line of a specific talent.
It was like you had to buy, I think, what was it? You had to buy 1,000 to guarantee that you got the voice line that you wanted for your of a specific caster.
And that, like, that was pretty big deal, I feel like, around in the Dota circles. And Valve changed that one within like 2 days or so, 1 or 2 days. And so for me, that kind of shows that Valve is still paying attention. That's number one thing for me that is showing me, is that, as well as that they are aware when the community is upset. So they must also know about how the community is upset about this PGL thing, about the betting sponsor, about the casting being made from being remote for group stage, as well as the last chance qualifiers. And so my thought is, right now they might be really trying this out with, we're going to see it through with PGL managing it. And afterwards, we most likely will have to make changes, but they're not going to make changes right now, because now it's too late. Like, you can't make changes. Like, you can't make changes to that production anymore. That's just not possible. Or like, not big changes, I should say. Like, of course, small changes can still happen, but you cannot suddenly change flying in all the casters to Singapore for the last chance qualifiers. That's not feasible. Even with like 3 weeks time, I feel like that would be very, very tough. So like, how do you feel about that, like that aspect of it, that it might not be as bad for the future of Dota?
I kind of agree. So the stickers were a big problem. That was ridiculous the way the numbers worked out. I think Kyle wrote it out perfectly. It was like you had a 1 in 1,000 chance of getting a specific voice line that you wanted. You know, and especially because of if you don't want to support the Russian casters or anything to go with that, it was really tough to even want to buy stickers. So to me, the move feels like, yeah, the community was really mad, but it felt like nobody was going to buy the stickers if they didn't do this. There was that much uproar around it. And so I think maybe Valve is responding positively. Like, you know what? This was a bad idea. Sorry. We fixed it. We'll be better next time. You know, if that's actually what it is, then I am super happy. But to me, it feels like they're like, this idea that we had to make more money isn't going how we wanted it to go. So we're going to make it so the Dota community is happy and they'll give us their money. And maybe that's
I see what you mean. I feel like it's always important to remember that, like, I see a lot of the outroar that is about it. I see it either on Twitter or on the Dota 2 subreddit. Like, that is where, like, most of that you will see. And I think it's important to remember that those are very small groups of the Dota community. Because, like, for example, like, there was Effie's voice line available for $50, and apparently it sold for $50, and Valve gets a cut of that sell even better than it during if it was bought as a capsule, because it was done during the Steam with the Steam marketplace. So it feels like that was profitable for them, but it wasn't okay with the community, because like there are a ton of whales for Dota, and like they are supporting the scene. And they are the ones who would be able and are making these purchases. And if they are really going with the numbers, I don't think that changing it back to the method that we have now, where you can buy specific voice lines, is necessarily that much more money. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's fair. And maybe it's just me being this negative Nelly, you know. Valve is always the bad guy here. Yeah, XYZ. Yeah. So coming back around here to Last Chance Qualifiers, looking at the teams that are in it, it's a bit of a slugfest. And you, on top of that, the format, it's literally like a mini TI, right? There's going to be a group stage into a playoff stage. Top two teams come out and are going to TI. Everybody else, I mean, you said it's going to be like a Hunger Games-esque style. Looking at the teams, and you can let me know if you agree here, it really feels there's like three teams that have this high percentage of coming out. And, you know, you say what you want. We're NA based, wildcard announced. I'm like, I just don't see it. And so I'm looking, I'm like, okay,
I'm
well,
T1 winner nouns. Uh-oh.
Oh no. I'm just looking. It's like Virtus Pro were half a point from qualifying directly to TI. They have to be in discussion for being, you know, a favorite in this. And then I feel like Extreme Gaming were just the fourth best team in China, and they were taking games off of, you know, the top teams that got, you know, directly invited as well. So it's just like I have Extreme and Virtus Pro moving on. What do you think?
I don't think it's going to be as clear. Mostly because, like, we had regional qualifiers, and now we had quite a bit of a break. All of those teams have had boot camps. They've been training. And you never quite know how that training went. Like, before TI8, OG was last place. Just saying. At TI5, C-Deck came from a wild card and made it to second place at TI after having boot camped and all of that. So, for example, like, I'm also just going to say it feels tough to speculate because they're from all over the world, like all of the different regions combined. And we don't know how the new style, like the new patch, is really all going to mesh with each other, because every region has kind of their own style. How is South America going against like CIS? How is Southeast Asia against North America? Like in South America, Hokori got first place in the regional qualifiers. They were eighth in Division 1 during the actual season.
Yeah, so, that's true. Yeah.
There's a lot of upset that can be happening here, and that is what I'm going to be looking for. Like, what's going to be the upset team? And look, Neff, if you're watching this, for you, buddy, Nouns is going to be the upset team. They're going to be the winner right here. Quote me. If Nouns goes to TI, we can send everybody this clip right here. And I said it.
And I will just say, you know, I'm just really excited to see how, specifically, I guess, the NA teams, but, you know, it kind of goes across the board to see how they fare against these quote unquote up, you know, bigger teams. Mm-hmm. You know, most people know the names from Nouns. They might not know the wildcard players, But this is really going to be the first time that we see these teams on an international stage. And it, obviously, it's not the TI teams, but it's a lot of damn good teams. So I'm very, very excited to see if they can actually produce results. Because that's kind of been the purpose of the DPC almost, right? Is to get these wild cards, to get these nouns, to get these tempests, to continually improve them, and eventually maybe they'll actually be able to like break into the scene, right? And so I'm fingers crossed. Hopefully they put up a good showing. I'm just maybe not as positive as you, as optimistic as you.
Once again, you're being very negative here, Brightside. How is your name Brightside if you're being so negative?
Yeah, it's just the duality of man. So
I think it's important to notion about this qualifier that it has a group stage. It is not like the previous wildcard qualifiers where it's just like four teams fighting against each other. No, it's like an entire, like as you mentioned, an entire group stage. And like those teams getting that valuable, valuable experience is very important. And that is why I feel so, so hyped about this. And I really wished, even if it was not flying all casters to Singapore, if they just had like a hub of bringing all casters of like all like many tier two casters together, as it now seems kind of likely, for this last chance qualifiers, because it feels then even more of like not only a celebration of tier one teams, tier one talent, but like also the tier 1.5 teams and tier 1.5 casters. Like there are many new casters coming to this TI, Snare, T-Panda, all of them coming in, suddenly showing their new voices to the scene, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, and that's true. And it's kind of like you get the main TI, and then this, like we said, this is pretty much just the mini TI. And so the mini TI, there's a lot more opportunities to get those casters that were in the DPC, but maybe weren't getting the primary exposure from, you know, the tippity top games.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Obviously, that's us, but we didn't get invited.
unfortunately, not quite there, Brightside.
Not quite there. So you brought up the the patch. So 7.32C patch gameplay update about a week and a half ago.
Yeah,
that came out about 10 days. Yep. So initial thoughts on the patch. I guess you know a brief. The big change is that they nerfed Refresher pretty hard, I'd say, was the big one. Mm-hmm. You can no longer share the cooldown, or you know, you can no longer triple refresh, I guess, is the big thing. And then you need to keep the Refresher orb in your inventory for it to actually tick down. So mm-hmm. I'm personally really excited for this patch. They nerfed all of the heroes that I felt like needed to be nerfed. I think specifically Marcy, Bat, Undying, Death Prophet are the big ones. They all got pretty sizable nerfs. And so like you mentioned, we're not too sure what teams are going to be doing on this patch, but what were your thoughts about it overall?
Yeah, I feel like it's quite an interesting patch. Overall, I feel like the 7.32, like overall that patch has been very fun for me. I feel like there's, like, at my level, everything is viable, but even more so, it feels like everything is, like, viable with a good, like, and it feels good to play. There is a lot of, like, you can make a lot of plays, and there are good counter plays available for you, which I feel like is always, that's, like, for me, the hallmark of a good patch. Like, for example, when there was, like, the Sven Axe where you flew and dispelled, what do you do against that as a support? You're just dead.
Yeah,
just
that dead. That patch was awful. You had to buy a blink dagger, otherwise you were instantly dead. That was not fun.
But like here, like if a PA gets like Desolator BKB as support, I can still, as always, like buy the Ghost Scepter and feel good about myself. And like all of those small things are there and they feel good to play. And so far, I've just been feeling like a lot of fun playing the game, but it still feels like a very similar game that we have played since last TI.
Yeah, and I guess, obviously we weren't going to get that game-breaking patch.
Oh, yeah.
But saying, when's the game-breaking patch? When's the patch?
And when's the map-changing patch?
And we really haven't had that, to your point, right? We haven't had that, you know, everything changes. Shrines, outposts, you're playing a new game. Let's figure it out. We haven't had that. That obviously we weren't expecting that from this one, but you are right. We haven't had that. To me, first off, I just want to note they buffed the, you know, the neutral item, the Eye of Vizier item.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that is the worst neutral item concept ever. Maybe item, just period, item concept, period. Max mana reduction. First off, you consider who's wearing the item. Yeah. It's either your POS 4 or your POS 5 that are wearing this item. Most supports can't even use this stupid freaking neutral item. You're losing 15% of your max mana now. It's been reduced from 20%. It was 20% before. So, and you're losing, you're a sixth or seventh of your mana practically to hold this neutral item, and you can cast like three abilities in team fights. So first off, they buffed it, which is nice, but I still don't think it's a usable neutral item. I would actually rather use a tier one neutral than use this stupid thing.
Can I say that I love using that neutral item?
Maybe it's just my hero pool. You have to like have arcane boots to use the neutral item or something. So for me, I think the big winner for this patch, I will say, is Silencer. That hero cancer. You know, you think about the 7.32B patch where it was all undying, right? He was like the de facto POS 5. You want to win your lane. He's going to win it no matter what. I think that might just be Silencer now. Mm-hmm. He got a strict buff on his arcane curse. So it's now 40. I believe it does instant damage at the start.
Yeah.
It does 40 instant burst damage. 40, 60, 80, 100 per level. His laning is mega AIDS now. It just I think he was already maybe a sleeper hero, but now he's just the de facto lane winner. And I think the other hero is Bounty Hunter. I don't know how much you've played of him, but I feel like he's been getting buffed for about like 7 straight patches.
Yeah.
He has like 8 starting armor, and he now got another 3 base damage. And what's big for him is that, you know, you get a base damage buff, but he has a built-in crit on top of that with Janata. It obviously bodes well for that hero. So unfortunately, any patch that Silencer and Bounty are meta, I don't know if I'm going to be playing. So those are my thoughts on the patch.
Kinda. Can I ask you a question as like the much smarter Dota player here?
Sure. What,
like, the new spell in Shadow Demon Disseminate, I feel like that sounds so good. I have not seen a Shadow Demon.
I think it's just a worse Fatal Bonds, though. Isn't that like the thing? Is it like it's like spread damage to the
Fatal Bonds and Disseminate?
Maybe. I mean, the problem is just that the game is very laning oriented. And Shadow Demon sucks at laning, so it's a bit difficult. Specifically, if Silencer comes in a meta, playing these save supports is awful. It's just nightmare fuel. So I do agree. I believe they change it. What it's your it bypasses damage block or something now.
Yeah.
So if you disseminate a target and you deal physical damage to them, the heroes that it spreads to, you can't block that damage or something. I believe it's how it works. But I don't know if the hero is going to be particularly viable. I don't know. But that's the patch. Those are kind of the big thoughts from us. Moving into here, we are going to do a quick run through of our TI predictions, Apon. Waiting. The predictions are finally out. That must mean we're really close to TI after all.
First question first.
Okay.
Whoever gets more points, what can we do here? What can we do here between us two here, Brad said?
Maybe the loser has to get a haircut. Maybe we'll have to do some sort of Dota playing challenge, like sock on hands, or, you know, you have to play a Dota game with socks on your hands.
That would be very funny, actually.
I know that's I stole that from our friend Ka. Oh. That's his stream. That's his thing. But it is fun.
We could actually do it that it has to be while we're playing together.
Oh,
so
Lord.
It actually kind of creeps both of them. It would be funny, though.
I feel like as the winner, though, you're not really benefiting from the experience then. So we'll brainstorm that. You know, next episode, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, next episode, we won't have the exact results yet. So we went over a little bit of the last chance prediction. So what is your actual prediction here?
So unfortunately, I'm an NA guy. I couldn't get it. I couldn't do it. I didn't predict NA. Sorry. I'm sorry, Neff, if you listen. So I have Extreme Gaming and Virtus Pro moving on. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you have Nouns plus one.
Yes, I have Nouns. They will be winning. There's no question about it. And, you know, Extreme Gaming does look really good. They are looking pretty strong.
And they have the name value, too. I think that's worth pointing out for Extreme.
Yeah, I feel like many people might not have heard of the team name, but who do they have on their team?
I mean, they have... So I'm sure you've heard of almost everybody on their team. Old 11... He's been around. Paparazzi, he's been around. PYW, Haas 4 player. Known, I think he's known for his Earth Spirit. He's been around for ages. DY has also been around. And I think Lou is also a notable name.
I feel like he's been a staple in like the Chinese Tier 2 scene for a long time.
But I think he had... did he change his name? Maybe not. Okay, maybe I'm completely capping. Mm-hmm. Okay, I am probably capping, but that's their roster. They got four veterans plus Lou, who is this, you know, up and coming god gamer apparently. So it is very taking Extreme feels is very tempting.
It is, and so I have them, but like once again, like we already talked a little bit to death here, but like there are so many teams. Like there's a T1 with Thompson and Ana.
Yeah,
there is like Team Liquid. You know, Team Liquid, Team Secret, as you mentioned, Virtus Pro, Infamous, you know, my SA boys.
We'll see. It's going to be a slugfest, like you said. So moving on here. Unfortunately, I couldn't clear this. I did put some initial thoughts in, so bear with us. You'll have to manage. So most picked hero, Apon. We did talk briefly about the patch. You know, I thought Silencer and Bounty are the big winners. Who do you have as your most picked hero?
Yeah, for most picked hero, I feel like it's always important. It is not the most broken hero because that hero is usually going to get banned quite a lot. It is a hero that is really good, but not quite ban worthy yet. So I'm currently between two heroes.
Okay.
One hero, he's always pretty much at TI Earthshaker. It's just Earthshaker.
Yep, I do agree with that one. And who's the other?
Elder Titan, a sleeper pick.
Elder Titan. I do think that hero might actually be decent too. So I personally am. I have Shaker already shown on the screen. I think I'm keeping that. To me, he's probably just the best POS 4 right now, except maybe Marcy. But Marcy, I feel like, got some pretty tough nerfs as a support, her rebound specifically. So normally when you play POS 4, I guess any role, Marcy, you're going 1-1-4, right? Mm-hmm. But the level 1 rebound is now 27 seconds, I think. It's brutal. So they made the hero a lot tougher to play as a support, so I feel like she's going to go down on the priority list. I agree with you. Earthshaker, lock it in. So most banned... I had Undying on here from the last patch.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to change that to the hero I think is going to be most broken, to the Silencer.
Okay. Look, Brightside, you just made a whole spiel about how Marcy has been nerfed so hard. I have Marcy as my most banned
okay.
hero.
Okay. So I have like 150 games that hero, you know that. I love me some Marcy.
Yeah.
The hero fundamentally is still broken, but I feel like teams are still just overrated. I can't shake this feeling. Like, what do I know? Maybe I'm completely wrong. But All right, so you have Marcy. I can't fault you for that one. That hero's just been the hero since she got added to Captain's Mode, right?
So fucking strong. Like, yeah. Like, I mean, also Dawnbreaker, ever since she's been added, like, that's my hero, like, as you know. Has, like, still been so strong. Like, both of those.
Dawnbreaker could also be up there. I don't think so. But, all right, so moving on. Hero with the highest win rate. So, for me, this is normally kind of a sleeper hero that is you think is really strong, but might not be, you know, like the creme de la creme of the cores, right? And it could be a support as well, but normally I think it's a carry or a core pick. So for me, I have Shadow Fiend.
Oh,
a hero that a lot of teams are starting to play as a carry. But it's kind of a niche pick still, like an 18-24 hero. And it feels like when this hero has a good game, the game's over.
Yeah, I feel like Pure just makes that very clear.
Absolutely.
Like, he just owns on the Shadow Fiend. So I always think about this, the like highest win rate. Like, you want a hero that is being played like maybe 6 games and wins 5 of them. And for me, I have Huskar.
That's true. The problem for me with Huskar is I think he might be too meta.
Really?
Because so like you think about the teams that are going, obviously OG is going. They're going to play offlane Huskar. More, right? You have to remember OG. That. So they're kind of the one that makes picking Huskar kind of dicey. The other hero I was actually thinking about was Pudge.
I think Pudge will be also picked more than just like a few games.
Maybe. But I also think that hero is tough to deal with as well. So, but maybe again, maybe Pure on Entity is diluting, is like poisoning my mind or something. But so I'm going to stick with Shadow Fiend. What are you going with?
Now that you said it, like Huskar might be too meta. So I'm thinking about what else could be picked here. How is the Broodmother hero?
I'm not too sure. I mean, I played against one in Unranked the other day. Didn't do well. I know Monkeys Forever has been playing a lot of offlane Brood. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The hero is very greedy. And it's very easy to punish Brood in the early laning stage. Specifically when laning is very important right now. So it's a bit tough to me to put Brood. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, you got to risk it for the biscuit. I'm going to go with Broodmother.
Okay. All right. Respect.
It's a very unconventional pick there. Very unconventional.
Okay. I respect that. So, hero with the highest kill average. To me, this is always these, you know, super fast farmers cores almost always, I feel like, right? And they get super farmed super fast with super high damage, and they just pwn with their item timing. So, for me, that hero that embodies that, that's in a pretty decent spot, is Sven.
Oh.
So you get, you know, Sven's a hero. You get 3 or 4 items. You get your blink. You get your BKB. And you just go to town. Mm-hmm. That's my big one. There's some other options, I feel like. What are you thinking?
Zeus.
That's true.
So, I'm going to spoil this a little bit, but I have Zeus for both highest kill average and highest assist.
Yeah, so
I'm going to get either of the two.
Yeah, I'm going to change that right now. We can kind of clump those in together.
Yeah.
So Zeus to me is the assist god.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like obviously the ulti is like the kill secure specialty in Dota, but it doesn't feel like... I feel like the hero isn't involved enough maybe to get all of the kills in a game. Like, he's not very mobile. Like, I guess he is mobile, but he's not very fast around the map. And it's hard for him to gank. It's hard for him to get super involved until the mid to late game. So I do agree with you on the assist though.
What I'm just thinking about is like, I feel like in a Zeus game, If the Zeus is kind of losing, it's going to become a pretty long game because pushing into Zeus can be a nightmare. And so, like, Zeus, he might not be played too many times, but even in the games where he will be played. It might very well be a pretty long game, which is also going to bring the kill average up.
That's true. And to your point, if there are these long games, you know, going down one column here, I do have Zeus as the hero with the most last hits in a game.
Oh, interesting.
Which is different from what you would normally put.
Yeah.
So I feel like normally, you know, with the hero and the most last hits in a game, you put these Giga Farm late game carries, you know, Naga, Terrorblade, Medusa. But I'm going to put Zeus because I do think that's going to happen.
Huh. You make a very solid argument there. I have hero with most last hits in a game as Terrorblade right now. And I feel like I want to keep it that. Like, Sometimes you don't fuck with tradition, you know.
I can't fault you. I feel like I'm being a little different with that one. Just trying to be different, you know. So I guess just moving on here. So hero with the most kills in a game. This one's interesting because I did talk about OG being at TI, and to me they have this Arc Warden pick that they pull out sometimes, where he gets, you know, Octarine Ags, and he just takes over the game. And I've seen that get 20-plus kills in officials already. So I'm putting Arc Warden.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, in one game, there will be a game in which there will be a last pick Ursa, and the bear is just going to go ham. The bear is going
to
go ham.
The bear is going to go to town, is what you're telling me. Okay.
Yep.
All right, Apon as Ursa.
It's an Apon Zeus guarantee. I'm not sure how much they are worth it, but we're going to find out today.
Okay. Highest XPM. We can cover these next two pretty quickly. Yeah. I feel like XPM and last hit average kind of go hand in hand. So for me, the highest XPM is always going to be an Ancient's Flash Farmer. Get super farm, super fast, can take stacks. So for me, I have Templar Assassin.
I have Arc Warden. A little bit of a different hero.
For XPM average?
You know, you make a beat.
I don't agree with that. Maybe you'll be right. But I think these ancient farming heroes, they take the cake for me. So I'm going to stick TA. Apon has Arc Warden.
You know, I'm just going to say, like you think about the game. Meanwhile, I'm here. I'm like, I see a hero that has double Midas and is not Ogre.
Maybe it'll be Ogre. If it's Ogre, I will eat my shoe on stream on the next podcast if it's Ogre. All right.
If it is Ogre, that would be so funny. That would be so funny.
So similar vein for me, the highest lasted average, these flash farming heroes. So I thought it might be Sven, but I feel like Luna is also right in that category, where you just get like a million last hits at 20 minutes and then the game ends. So what do you think?
So I saw that EG is at TI. So there will be more than 5 games played of Arteezy Naga Siren that will get dragged out for a long, long time, where he has like 800 last hits and then they lose. But he will give me the highest last hit average of Naga Siren.
I guess that's true. They don't have to win. I always feel like you have to win for that to be a valid, but you know, you're right, because Naga is tempting. Arteezy does love his, or Terrorblade.
Yeah, like it's, like for me, I was thinking between Naga Siren and Terrorblade, and that's why I have
Terrorblade. I'm putting Terrorblade. You've convinced me. All right.
Okay.
Very quickly then, before we move on, Husk. I have Huskar as my lowest death average, because I feel like in the games that the hero is picked, he has a save with him. It's a great Huskar game most of the time. And then you get first or second Aegis, and then the game ends. Mm-hmm. So not a lot of opportunity to die, I feel like.
You just told me that Huskar is going to come kind of into the meta, which is why I have here Lifestealer, which I feel like is not really in the meta. But if you get a good Lifestealer game, that hero just doesn't die. I hear Brightsef being like, what the fuck?
Not buying it. Moving on here. Let's just do teams really fast here. So I think this is the year Maybe it's me just wanting to see Ame win a TI. Maybe it's Copia, but this is the year PSG LGD are winning it. Apon, what do you got?
PSG LGD are winning it. I have it too. I'm like, Ame, sometimes you're gonna get it.
All right, so we can go a little. These are kind of a crapshoot, I feel like.
Yeah, we don't have to go
too in depth here. Team with the most kills, I always put an SA team on here. I put Beast Coast because they go ham. Mm-hmm.
I go with Thunder Awaken because Dark Mago, when he plays the mid lane, he like just ganks and he just ganks and he ganks with his Mars and just gets killed all over the map. And they might not win, but they're gonna get a lot of kills.
SA baby, I see we're in the same vein. Highest kill average. I didn't do an SA team. I actually thought about it, but I did put Tundra. Because they play a very quick style. It can, you know, normally they do at least with 3-3s hero pool. So maybe. I imagine you have an SA team.
Yeah, there I have Beast Coast.
Okay.
Like, Beast Coast also likes to go ham.
Yep. So, fewest deaths in a game. Normally, I feel like this is just the best teams have this one. So, I put LGD. They're going to have a clean game. They've got the Chinese buff. The discipline.
I'm going to say there's going to be, like, one or two games during group stage in which Entity just gets, like, all of their comfort picks and none of them ever dies.
Okay. I can see that as well. And then these ones are kind of a crapshoot. You can just list one. Most assists in a game, I put Bet Boom.
I have Beast Coast.
Beast Coast. Team with the longest game is Fnatic for me.
I have EG.
Okay. See, that one is also fair. I think both those teams like to draw their games out. Yeah. Shortest game, I put Tundra again. Though I could very see Entity. I might change it to Entity.
I have LGD. They're going to outdraft in a game. And it's just going to end it at like 14 minutes where the enemy team just realizes we have nothing to do here.
That's true. Okay. Highest game length average. If only Eternal Envy was in this TI, that would be a freebie. Sure. But I have Thunder Awaken. I don't like why I put them. I'm going to put TSM because I feel like they always play these mid-game drafts.
I also have Thunder Awaken, and I'm not going to change it.
You're not? Okay, well, I guess I'm just a beta or something. I'm a cop-out.
Yeah.
Team with the most different heroes, I have OG.
Same, OG.
Yep, I feel like that one's pretty easy. And maybe we're wrong, but we'll go down together. And then team with the fewest different heroes, this one's very interesting. I have Aster.
Oh. You know, you gotta go with the memes. Evil genius.
Oh my gosh. He's full of copium. Alright. And so we can do the players very quickly.
I actually haven't done the players.
I haven't done the players either. So
this might take a little bit more. So what kind are we thinking of?
We'll do them faster. We'll try and do them a little faster.
Yeah.
So highest kill average is normally a mid to me that plays these flashy ganking heroes. So, you know, I think it could just be Dark Mago. I won't lie.
Nothing to say?
You think nothing to say? That one's fair.
Like, he loves to play a fucking mean tinker.
But at the same time, I do think it could very well be Pakaz because of the way that team plays.
Yeah, Pakaz is like such a sleeper player. I feel like
he's not as sleeper as he was, but at the major he popped off. But yeah. So I'm gonna put Pakaz.
I'm gonna go with nothing to say.
Okay, player with the most kills in a single game. So single game here. I'm putting nothing to say because there's gonna be a game where he picks Tinker and just eviscerates the competition.
Yeah, we've seen True Sight. We're gonna that SFM. Was really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
One second. I'm going to need a second here. Most kills in a game. 3-3 is going to pop off on one of his signature heroes.
Okay. Lowest death average. This one's normally a carry just from past years because of, you know, the way that carry is. So I'm going to... There's so many good carries at this TI. It's crazy. But I'm going to put Tomato.
Tomato? Oh, damn, going with the North American blood. Yeah, Toro. He has good spicy senses.
All right, highest assist average. This is either going to be some mid that's playing Zeus, or maybe it's a five. It's probably either a four or five, or more likely, in my opinion. So I'm going to put Jin Q. The old reliable. Can't go too wrong with him, I feel like.
Average. It's the average one. Second tier. I have to think about this one. Moon Meander. I like.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, Moon Meander.
Okay.
Yeah.
Player with the most assists in one game.
Yeah, in one game.
I'm not too sure. This is norm. I feel like this is normally. This is a very similar thing, right? You think who's what's going to have the most assists in a game, like Zeus or something? Who's playing Zeus? Mm-hmm. I might put Nothing to Say again.
Okay, I'm going to put Fishman. He's going to get a Gen game where he's just involved in nearly every kill. He has such good map movements. He's such good map.
I can't fault you too much. I am going to put Arteezy for the highest lasted average.
Yeah, you know, it's
where is he? Been, does it not the hell?
It's
oh,
the, it's
he's the Chinese letters. Letters. That's right.
Yeah.
I think I'm putting Arteezy for both, actually. Let's go. I'm full copium.
Full copium. Okay. Highest lasted in a game. There's going to be a game in which Prakash just refused to let his game team lose, and he just keeps on farming on Terrorblade or something like that.
All right, and then most GPM in a game. This is going to be probably whoever picks out carry, probably, yeah. But I don't know how good the hero is, so that's a...
I feel like Arteezy likes his Alchemist.
He does like his Alchemist, but I can't put Arteezy three times in a row. I can't, just can't do it. I can't. So you can put Arteezy. I think I'm going to put Yatoro.
Yatoro?
You can't go too wrong with the TI champs. Actually, okay. Yeah.
I'm going to put Duraccio.
Really? Okay. I haven't thought about that team at all, but yeah, Gaming Gladiators. Highest GPM average. So for me,
that is just like a team that like goes to the grand finals through the winner bracket.
So for me, this is probably for this one, I'm going to put Ame.
Yeah, same.
Also, what is it with the Chinese players? And they have this frizz. They have the frizziest hair in their pictures. Do you notice that? Like their hair is. So it looks like it's something out of a manga or something. Player that plays the most different heroes. I'm going to copy from last year. Yatoro is going to do it again.
Oh, Yatoro. You had Yatoro in there? You saw that? You saw it coming?
I didn't have him last year, but I think he was the winner of it last year.
Yeah, so. He was.
Tournament, I'm not too interested in that one. I won't lie. I feel like that one's kind of a crapshoot. So.
Really? I'm super interested in those.
You want to? We can do it.
Okay, total. This is. I feel like this is pretty quick. Total number of games. I feel like 50 to 54.
That's exactly what I put.
Mm-hmm. Number of heroes picked, 101 plus. I think it's a really good patch.
Yeah, it's tough for it, dude. It's just tough to me because how many heroes are unpickable? When you look at the heroes that are like strictly unpickable right now, there's not many. You're right. Maybe it is 101 plus. Let's do it. Total number of heroes banned.
I think 91 to 100.
That feels high.
Yeah.
I feel like I like to be in the middle somewhere on this one. So I'm going to do 71 to 8. I'm going to do 81 to 90.
I'm going to do 71 to 80. Most combined total kills in a game. We're going to see 101 to 110.
That's exactly what I put. Yep. Longest game of the tournament. There's going to be some 70-minute game, probably.
You know, I miss when Dota could have gone to 100 minutes.
It just doesn't feel like that's possible anymore.
There's no eternal envy at this tournament.
That's true.
Yeah,
God bless him. His streams are good, though. So hopefully,
his streams are very fun. Yeah. This is very nice. Shortest game, 10 to 15. Somebody's going to GG out at like 12 in a group stage.
I feel like 10 to 15 is a bit... I'm going to do 15 to 20 because I do feel like that's a bit short. But yeah, I'm right there with you. Most kills by one hero. Let's do... I'm going to do 20 to 22.
I'm thinking about 23 to 25, but it feels... Yeah, 20 to 22. 20 to 22 is a fair one.
And then most deaths, 15 to 17.
Yeah.
There's going to be some pathetic Shen game or just some useless hero that just chain feeds Shirley this tournament.
Some like Oracle game where like it's against a silencer and like a storm spirit and you're just like, yo, what am I doing here?
Most assists, 28 to 31 for me.
Yeah. Highest GPM, 1,000+. Yeah. I feel like
that's
pretty safe.
There's always one of those games, it feels like, right at TI. So, full predictions. You guys watching the podcast, give us your thoughts on how we did, how wrong we probably are. Mostly Apon, because I'm always right. But
Excuse me.
Excuse. So that's going to be it for episode one of Crossing the River here. Hopefully you like, comment, subscribe. This will be on YouTube, Spotify, everywhere that you get your podcasts, assuming I figure out how to do that. So
We're going to get there.
Apon, thank you so much. You are your pleasure as always.
As always, a pleasure to talk with you, Brightset. Let's... next episode, we're going to be talking some more Dota and some more esports.
Absolutely. Yep. You know, subscribe if you're interested in the content or other esports you might want to listen to us talk about. I know Apon loves his fighting games, so maybe some Smash Bros in there.
We're going to be playing some fighting games soon together.
Oh, yeah. I'm being guilty into that.
You give some of your opinions on the next podcast.
All right. So thank you, everybody, for watching. Stay tuned for next time. We'll see you later.